This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Green Tea CR Phytosome Formula from Purity Products. It's the power of three of nature's top superfoods, a clinically tested green tea plus curcumin and resveratrol, all in one simple capsule. It's clinically proven to support your energy, vitality, and cardiovascular function. The secret behind Green Tea CR is its phytosome matrix, which boosts its green tea power by over 200% compared to regular green tea. Our friends at Purity Products have a free bottle for you to put to the test. Just pay $4.95 for shipping. Experience the power of this trio and see how good you can feel. Call 1-800-218-6030. That's 1-800-218-6030. Call now. As these move fast, dial 1-800-218-6030. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And today, the theme of the program is dispelling some major nutritional controversies. Today, we're going to talk to an expert. He's been a good colleague of mine for goodness knows how long. He is Neil Levin. He's a clinical nutritionist, and he's Senior Nutrition Education Manager for Protocol for Life Balance, the maker of supplements that are dispensed by health professionals, and also the brand that's available in retail stores is Now Foods, and they make great supplements. I utilize them frequently, and he lectures all over the country, has written numerous position papers about various aspects of nutrition. So I'm going to challenge him to address some of these nutritional controversies. Welcome, Neil. It's a pleasure having you on Intelligent Medicine.
I appreciate you having me on. Thank you.
It's my great pleasure. Okay, so first of all, you've been in this field for a long time, and there's sort of the fads and trends, and sometimes you want to smack your forehead and say, you know, where did people get these ideas? And somehow these ideas, they become very viral. People latch onto them, and it causes a great deal of misdirection, doesn't it?
It does, and some of that is deliberate, that certain companies might latch on to some esoteric type information and broadcast it as a differentiator of their products from others, mm-hmm. and kind of magnify the difference beyond what's real.
Mm-hmm. In other words, so they might say that, okay, well, everybody is using such and such herbal nutraceutical, but that's bad because it's toxic, and we have come up with the unique formulation that is the most bioavailable and health beneficial. You know, something along those lines.
Right. That's exactly what they're looking for, some kind of edge over their competition, and it doesn't matter how real it is in terms of whether it's really toxic or not. Mm-hmm. If they can find some test tube study or something that's not really good evidence and trump that up, then they end up with something that they can use to market and bash the competition.
Exactly. Provides them with a marketing edge. Okay, so let's jump right into it, Neil, shall we? One of the big controversies, and, you know, I get this from a lot of patients, from listeners, you know, sometimes on our Q&A, we're called upon to address this question. Stearic acid and magnesium stearate are found, these are common additives in supplements, and a lot of people read labels and they say, oh my goodness, there's this substance, I don't even know what this is, magnesium stearate. I've heard it's bad for you and it's in so many supplements, so I'm going to find a brand that doesn't have that in it. True or false?
That happens a lot, and we do get that question fairly regularly. And what people don't realize is that the stearates are abundant in the diet, that you're getting that in your food, and the average intake is about 5 grams, 5,000 milligrams a day for women, and about 8 grams, 8,000 milligrams a day for men. And it represents almost 10% of the total fat intake from eating foods in men and women on an everyday basis. So stearic acid is a very abundant part of our diet. It's one of the major fatty acids. And if you eat red meat, 30% or so of that fat is stearic acid. And if you eat chocolate, about a third of that fat is chocolate. And in fact, I was looking at a chocolate bar, and it was a 200-calorie serving of 72% dark chocolate. And I estimated it would contain about 5,000 milligrams of stearic acid. Now, if you buy a tablet, they don't use it in capsules, but stearic acid or magnesium stearate might be used at a level of maybe 1/1,000th that much or lower.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very, very low amount that's in the diet. And by the way, stearic acid is in every natural source of fat on Earth. If you eat an olive, if you eat fish, if you eat anything containing fat, a nut, a seed, it will contain stearic acid because that's a natural fatty acid. And the amount in supplements is less than in foods. And magnesium stearate is simply chelated magnesium, which a lot of your listeners will be familiar with, where chelated magnesium is magnesium bonded to some other nutrient like stearic acid. And it's 99% stearic acid, 1% magnesium. So you have a tiny amount of fat that's abundant in the diet, and you have a tiny bit of magnesium that a lot of us lack, and there's nothing inherently wrong with it.
So, and what's the reason for including magnesium stearate in supplements? Why does it need to be there? Because there are some manufacturers who are offering magnesium stearate-free supplements as kind of a premium. You know, they say, well, ours are superior, but is it necessary to put that in?
It's sometimes necessary for sticky materials because it's a vegetable wax. It's a waxy substance that's used really as a lubricant.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a way to have high speed.
So on the assembly line, it enables the powder to be distributed without caking, et cetera, that kind of thing.
Yes, and it's more efficient to make capsules at a higher speed. If you have to slow down the machine and clean it more often, it's going to cost a lot more for that same capsule as it would for something else. And it's rarely used inside capsules. Soft gels, really never. And tablets is really where you see more of it, but there's really not very much. And they took a test tube study that was designed to look for whether substances would prevent rejection of transplanted organs. So it had nothing to do with normal immunity.
Mm-hmm.
And it got misinterpreted by some of the companies as it reduces immunity. And there's actually other studies showing it's okay.
Yeah. Okay. So, you can find on virtually any supplement known to man, you can find a study that suggests that it's potentially harmful. But under unusual circumstances, test tube circumstances and a cell line that's an unusual type of cancer, something along those lines. I'm down with your explanation. I'm fully in accord with your approval of magnesium stearate. I've been telling my listeners that for a long time. Let's move on to another big controversy. This is a very fundamental controversy, which is the contention that healthy diets are likely to provide adequate nutrients without supplementation. You don't need all those supplements. You're just going to be making expensive urine because a healthy, balanced diet provides you with a wide assortment of vitamins, minerals, as God and nature intended. What say you?
Well, a lot of that is based on theoretical information. For example, a lot of the nutritional studies, like the NHANES study, which is a national survey of people's diet, they look at the diet, but they're using USDA, the Department of Agriculture, food tables to calculate what nutrients are in there. And when they actually test the foods and compare them to USDA food tables, they find that they're no relation anymore, because the USDA built these tables that people are using to build nutrition labels or to assess diets in 1940.
Oh, wow.
And the diet has changed, the varieties of plants, how they're grown, how the soil is treated, how they're harvested, ripened, processed. There's really no relation. Even a carrot, they found carrots have far less iron, about half as much iron as they did. Red meat has declined by between 50 and 80% the amount of iron because they're not grazing animals anymore. The milk is losing fatty acids like CLA and vitamin E. some of the healthy fats. The protein's down by 6%, the vitamin C by 20%, the vitamin B by up to 36%. The minerals are down, copper and magnesium. In dairy products, they found 60% drop in copper levels, which we need to make about 200 enzymes in our body. So they're assuming that the food has certain nutrient levels that it doesn't have. And one researcher who's an Olympic trainer told me about 25 years ago, he was having Olympic athletes come to his place and he was juicing oranges for them. He's outside of San Diego. And he wanted to see how much vitamin C they were getting. So he had it tested and found almost no vitamin C. And he looked at the crate and he saw it was from a farm maybe an hour or two drive away. He decided to go there and buy a fresh crate, bring it home and test it. And it had plenty of vitamin C. So it was the storage after harvesting that was responsible for that.
Right. And this also doesn't speak to the issue of special nutritional requirements that are either genetic. Some people seem to be more genetically prone to vitamin deficiencies. And then there are multiple disease states. And then there's a very high percentage of people who are on medications, which can prevent absorption or interfere with the action of certain critical nutrients. I mean, virtually half the population of America or more taking one or another over-the-counter or prescription meds. And then you have a recipe for nutritional deficiency, even if you're actually putting adequate nutrients in your mouth.
Well, that's true. And special diets are a key area that we look at. People on gluten-free diets risk deficiencies of fiber and folate. People on low-carb diets, fiber, vitamins, antioxidants, carotenoids, phytochemicals. People on paleo diets, B vitamins, calcium, vitamin D. Vegan diets, B12, zinc, iron, iodine, omega-3 fats, protein. You know, whenever anyone's on a restricted diet, they're at risk.
Indeed. So, you know, I think we can push back against the skeptics, although, you know, this is pretty much the prevailing view in the medical community is that, you know, what do you say? Why are you taking all those supplements? Notwithstanding the fact that a very high percentage of doctors take supplements and urge their family members to do so. So let's talk about the soy controversy. Boy, that's a real vociferously argued controversy. Soy, according to some experts, is a boon to mankind. It's going to save the planet. You know, we can all subsist on meat substitutes made out of soy. Other people believe that even a smidgen of soy will trigger autoimmunity, indigestion, and even cancer. So, you know, where do you stand on that?
Well, let's face it. Some people are intolerant or even allergic to soy. So, you know, that's legitimate, of course, but there's a lot of fear of soy. And I say a lot of people are intolerant of soy rather than having soy intolerance because they think it's going to hurt them, even though it might not. And one of the controversies is some people say that people in Asia eat only fermented soy. And I've been to China five times
not
and
entirely
they eat
true.
Mostly
yeah.
tofu, which they've made it at my table. Before I ate, you know, right while you're sitting there, it is not a fermented food.
It's basically congealed soy milk. It's sort of, you know, molded right. and congealed. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And edamame, which are the, look like green beans that you open.
Yeah.
But also they've done studies, bodybuilders were given soy supplements and they compare soy and whey protein. There were no pro-estrogenic effects, no hormonal effects, no anti-anabolic effects in multiple studies. They looked at people containing soy lecithin, where there are some estrogenic activity from soy lecithin, which you know, if you're eating a lot of lecithin, that could be an issue, but most people aren't getting that much. And the American Cancer Society says there's no evidence that eating soy foods is harmful, even for people who have had breast cancer, and they have hormone-dependent cancer.
And even some studies from China that we've seen suggest that women post-breast cancer who consume soy, even moderate amounts of soy, not massive amounts, not even soy supplements like isoflavones, but just dietary soy, they do slightly better. I mean, it's not a very robust protective effect, but it's certainly not a harmful effect. So to some extent, I think we can discount that, except for people who are soy intolerant. Well, what about people who read labels and they go, oh my goodness, that the phosphatidylcholine in this product is soy-derived, or the vitamin E in this product is soy-derived, so I can't have this product. Is that overkill?
That is overkill, because even the federal government defines the allergens that people would react to in products that are like soybeans or soybean oil, that highly processed products and ingredients like vitamin E or phosphatidylcholine, phosphatidylserine are not considered allergenic, and to have these problems. They don't contain GMOs either, by the way. They're so processed, even if they used to have GMOs in the soy, there's nothing in those ingredients. Mm-hmm. But look at vitamin E. It's USP grade. It's pharmaceutical grade. It's as pure vitamin E as they can isolate.
It doesn't have much soy protein. Since it's clear, it's not cloudy, it's not solid looking. When it's clear, it means it's a derivative of the oil with maybe a smidge or tiny residue, but almost on a molecular level, not on a material level, which could trigger big problems.
Yes, and they've actually looked at review studies for people who ate the soy protein isolate, mm-hmm. and looked at their rates of prostate cancer, colorectal cancer, and breast cancer, and they found on a whole that in different populations, men, women, pre- and postmenopausal women, that about 30% lower cancer rates in those who ate the most soy protein isolate, not fermented soy.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We briefly touched on GMOs. That's a big buzzword these days. By the way, big editorial in Wall Street Journal today, which got me really hot under the collar, basically saying, oh, you know, we don't need to label GMOs. What a waste of time. GMOs are fine. They're safe. We shouldn't even make the public aware of them, because it's just going to create mass confusion. People will think they're bad. What about GMOs when it comes to, you know, you formulate products for Protocol for Life Balance and for Now. Are you concerned about the introduction of GMO products into supplements?
I'm very concerned about it being in the food supply, including supplements. And one issue is, I think there's a misdirection going on here. The lack of evidence that GMO foods are harmful is largely deliberate. And that's my opinion, that the companies that own the patents on these are restricting research on the GMO products that are going to show that they might be bad. They actually license the seeds to farmers for a year. They don't sell them seeds, so that the farmers don't own the seeds. They can't replant the seeds. They can't use the seeds in studies. But also, the seed companies now have veto power over any studies that are done with those seeds. They still own those seeds even when the farmers grow them. Mm. So they've been avoiding having the hard studies, and there is no real control group except people who are using non-GMO products. And there is a lot of evidence that the GMO products are not healthy, that they have lower levels of nutrients, higher levels of anti-nutrients, and the use of the chemicals like glyphosate on the crops has been associated with problems like celiac disease rates rising dramatically in the last 20 years in hospital-diagnosed cases.
And what we're seeing is virtually everyone, you know, when we test people for blood levels or urine levels of glyphosate, it's ubiquitous. Virtually every breast milk, it's everywhere now in the environment. It's just this massive experiment where we're all imbibing Roundup, like it or not. Even those of us who choose to use GMO-free foods, it's being unleashed in the environment. It's in the water. It's in the food supply. And it's hard to avoid. So, you know, clearly an issue that we want to stay on top of. Just moving on to controversies. You have some opinions about food-bound vitamins, because there's some claims, some manufacturers claim that you don't want those synthetic vitamins, because that's coming out of a chemistry lab. You want the vitamins in the form of food-bound vitamins, natural, plant-derived, usually have bounteous fruits and vegetables on the labels, and the minerals and the vitamins are derived from plant sources, so they say. Is that better for you?
Well, it is better to get nutrients from food if you can. That doesn't mean that the nutrients in food are better absorbed or better for you. There's just more types of nutrients in foods. So if you're eating a food, you're eating an orange, you're not just getting vitamin C. You're getting other nutrients with it. If you eat broccoli, you're not just getting vitamin C or whatever nutrient you're going for there, vitamin A. There are other types of nutrients in that food. And that's really the main benefit to that. Now, there's a disadvantage to getting nutrients from food, vitamins and minerals, because it's hard to extract the vitamins and minerals from the food in a stable form. And when we're looking at studies, for example, we know that folic acid is almost twice as well absorbed as food folates because you don't get all the folate out of the food. And what happens to food folate? It's actually digested into folic acid. Your body has to be able to convert it into the methylfolate form for you to have DNA, to be born without birth defects, for all the other things that folate does. Your body has to have that competence of being able to convert methylfolate in food, digest it into folic acid. That folic acid has to be reconverted into methylfolate by the body, or we would not be alive. So we can all do that to various extents. Some people require much higher levels because they have an inefficient enzyme system, a genetic issue. And
sometimes referred to as the MTHFR gene, but other genes are implicated, right?
Right. And if they do about four times as much or five times as much folate as normal, folic acid or methylfolate, they tend to correct the problem. That it's not the methylation. It's the analogy I use, if you make bread and it rises nicely, you're making nice wheat bread, and you take the wheat flour out because you want to go gluten-free, and you use the same yeast, but here you are using rice flour, and it's like a brick. It doesn't rise. You're not going to blame the yeast, right? You're going to blame the different recipe. And in the same way, they're using a different recipe to make their enzyme. And it has different amino acids in there. And it's less efficient. It takes up to four or five times as many of those enzymes to do the same job in the body, which requires more folic acid or folate as a cofactor.
Yeah. And also, sometimes I think it's a little bit unscientific to say, well, I want my compound to come from a plant as opposed to from a chemistry lab, when actually, we all studied organic chemistry. These compounds are actually identical. But there's a sort of a romanticism of it being plant derived, as opposed to something which has been, quote, synthetically made.
And we've seen on things like beta carotene, one of the sources of vitamin A, that it comes in two different forms, cis and trans. They're mirror image forms, but they're chemically identical except for their structure. And there's a seaweed that's commonly used as a vitamin A source in supplements that's predominantly the cis form. Our bodies need the trans form. So if you're eating the synthetic one, it's actually going to work better than the seaweed source one, than the natural food source one. The other issue is a lot of the so-called synthetic B vitamins, for example, are used as a precursor to make coenzyme forms, active forms in the body. And in the same way, you have to take your vitamins out of the foods and digest them and extract them, which is inefficient. And then you end up with another form that you have to convert into the active form in the body. The body doesn't care which of these forms it gets because it can convert it into the same active natural product in the body, the active vitamin, the coenzyme form. So it doesn't matter if you're taking a synthetic B vitamin or getting it from your food. As far as the body's concerned, one is more efficient, the supplement, and one is less efficient, but they're going to make the same thing in the body. It doesn't matter so much in the end result.
Okay, Neil, this is a good point at which to pause because we divide our podcast into two parts. We're going to continue to take down some of the most prominent nutritional controversies in part two of today's Intelligent Medicine podcast. Stay with us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and we'll be right back.